It's Friday, August 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Welcome and hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a fatal stabbing attack takes place in the heart of London. China's crackdown of lawyers continues.
When he is like this, he can't help with work, and it is hard for me to work as well. It makes it difficult for the whole family.
Residents in Laos continue to deal with remnants of the Vietnam War. Also ahead, the Olympics are ready to begin, and country music royalty. It's all on today's International Edition. London police say they have found no evidence of radicalization to suggest terrorism after a Somali man stabbed a woman to death and wounded five other people in central London. Instead, they say the attack was likely triggered by mental health issues. Police arrested the 19-year-old man in Russell Square near the University of London after incapacitating him with a taser. The man, who has yet to be publicly named, is in police custody at a nearby hospital. VOA's Luis Ramirez is in London and tells International Edition host Sarah Williams that the British capital remains tense, even though this was not apparently a terrorist attack.
The police have come out with information, giving us more information on this 19-year-old suspect. We know that he is a Norwegian national of Somali origin. The police held this man overnight, and he was hospitalized. He was also wounded in the incident, and he has been discharged from the hospital. In the course of questioning, in the course of the investigation, they determined that there was nothing pointing to terrorism, which, of course, makes people breathe a great deal easier. However, the incident does highlight just how nervous this city is about a terrorist attack. In fact, the Metropolitan Police spokesman and the chief have said that it's a matter of time, not if or when, but when attack can happen in this city.
I believe British police, they're putting extra police on the streets. I don't know if it's to do with this attack, but I think there have been plans beforehand to do that.
That's correct. In fact, just hours before the attack happened, it happened late Wednesday, hours before the attack happened, police announced that they have plans to deploy 600 additional armed police to the streets of London. This is, of course, a huge departure. This is a city, this is a country where police have traditionally not been armed in general, but that scenario is changing. In fact, in the morning of Thursday after this attack, more police were visible carrying weapons. And that is, of course, a shock to people in the city.
Now, this happened in Russell Square, which is near the British Museum. It's also near the University of London. So there are a number of tourists around there. And what is known about the nationality of the victim, of the woman who died?
Well, early reports are that she was an American citizen. That has yet to be confirmed by the State Department or by the American Embassy. She's described as being in her 60s. The other victims, those who were wounded in this attack, were British, Israeli, and Australian. This is an area that is frequented by foreigners, both students and tourists. It's near the British Museum. It also has some symbolic significance because Russell Square was one of the areas that was hit in the terrorist attacks of 2005.
And also, this occurred not that long after recent terrorist incidents in Paris and in Brussels to other European cities. So I guess you could say there's heightened alert throughout the continent.
Absolutely. It was only just days ago that we had the church attack in France, and before that the truck attack in Nice, the attacks in Brussels earlier in the year, and then before that in Paris, and then not to mention the incidents that have also been seen in Germany. And so people in London have been quite vigilant.
The 60-year-old woman who was stabbed to death was treated at the scene by paramedics, but pronounced dead shortly after. Three victims released from the hospital early Thursday morning, and the condition of the two others are unknown. Mark Rowley, the Metropolitan Police Service's Assistant Commissioner for Specialist Operations, said that the police believe the mental health of the suspect to be a significant factor in this case, but cautioned that it's just one of several lines of inquiry. Well, it's time for us now to turn to something a little cheerier, our social media segment. And as always, our G, Abby Lee, joins me here in the studio with the day's trending story. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. GOP nominee Donald Trump's wife is trending once again after the New York Post published a racy photo shoot that took place back in 1995. Mm. But the online boss has little to do with the actual photos. Sad, right? It does, however, has to do with when the photos were taken.
Well, why is that?
Well, they were taken in the United States in 1995. That's consistent with a biography published by a Slovenian journalist. But Melania Trump herself has said she came to New York in 1996, which is a year after the photos were taken. So the political newspaper published a report stating that she may have first arrived in the country on a short-term visa, which doesn't allow her to work legally in the country.
Hmm.
And the photos were published earlier this week, and Trump released a statement Thursday. She wrote, "Let me set the record straight. I have at all times been in full compliance with the immigration laws of this country." But the statement did not indicate the specific time frame she arrived and immigrated to the United States. Nevertheless, her supporters expressed support. Here is one of the most popular replies to an image of the statement she shared on her Twitter. "We believe you over lying criminal media, Melania. Hang in there, you will be the first lady." Another user replied to that comment, "How exactly will she be the first lady if Trump is losing in, wait for it, Arizona?"
Ooh, ouch. Well, what's the reaction like to Politico's article?
Well, responses there were more critical of Trump. The top comment reads like this. "This is exactly what I meant when I said that the Trump's many lies would catch up to them. This is only the start of all the lies they have told and no longer can keep up with." That's very harsh. Mm. Others pointed out the potential negative impact the development will have on the Trump's immigration policy. One user wrote, "I don't know if she was an illegal immigrant, but if she was, that would only make it more ironic that her husband's signature cause is illegal immigration." Other media outlets like Bloomberg View have also reported on the inconsistencies. Melania Trump was born in Slovenia but became a U.S. citizen in July 2006. Jim, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, Chi, for that great wrap-up. You may tweet us your comments and questions to @VOA_IE. And you'll find myself and G on Twitter as well, @VOA Stevenson and @GAbbyLee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, the Taliban attack foreigners in Afghanistan's western Herat province. North Korean missile tests creating divisions in Asia. Why location of Chinese-Russia's South China Sea drill matters. Myanmar probes reported Islamic State threat against Aung San Suu Kyi. And Hong Kong becomes fertile ground for online news startups. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the VOAnews.com website. If you have a smartphone, check them out on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. A Chinese court handed down a 7-year prison term Thursday to 52-year-old Beijing lawyer Zhou Shifeng for subversion. Zhou is among dozens of lawyers and activists who were swept up last year in a crackdown on dissent. He pleaded guilty and declined to appeal his sentence. The state-run Xinhua News Agency, citing a court statement, said Zhou had long been influenced by anti-Chinese forces and gradually established ideas to overturn the country's political system. Authorities had accused his law firm, which represented ethnic Uyghur dissident Ilam Todi, of orchestrating protests and politicizing legal cases to gain international attention. Zhou's trial followed those of Jia Yanmin and Hu Shergen this week, both found guilty of the same charge of subversion. Jia on Tuesday was given a 3-year suspended sentence, while Hu was sent to prison for 7.5 years Wednesday. Human Rights Watch researcher Maya Wong in Hong Kong tells VOA's Victor Beatty that these trials demonstrate the ruling Communist Party's determination to shut down independent human rights activists and government critics.
Zhou Shifeng has been sentenced to a very harsh sentence of 7 years for doing nothing but acting as a lawyer, defending his clients, speaking to the press about the cases, and trying to rally support for those who he defends. And what is different about this case from the previous cases is that it shows just how much the authorities very limited tolerance for dissent is getting even less. Because these human rights lawyers have been working, doing the work they do for some time now. And so to slap a very serious charge of subversion and sentence them to harsh sentences just for doing what they have done in the past, it shows just how much under President Xi Jinping, the Chinese government, is moving towards even less tolerance towards dissent and civil society activism.
Maya, this is the third trial this week. Why is in such quick succession?
The lawyers and activists have been detained in secret incommunicado without access to their family and lawyers for about a year. So this is not very swift, but the trial itself seems to suggest that the authorities made a decision recently about how to handle these cases. So the trials were merely kind of sham trials. The sentences were already decided some time ago.
What kind of work was Mr. Zhou involved in?
Mr. Zhou is a lawyer, a director of a Beijing law firm called Sunray Law Firm, and he takes what the authorities consider as sensitive human rights cases, for example, defending government critics, defending those who practice religions that the government has banned because that they are outside of state control, defending other human rights activists who have run afoul of the authorities. So these are cases that Mr. Zhou has performed his role as a lawyer, and he has complied with Chinese law. There's nothing that he has done that is outside of the law. And for doing so, he's been slapped with a very harsh sentence of 7 years.
Rights researcher Maya Wong said many of these lawyers and activists have been held for over a year, denied access to family and lawyers. She said it's possible that they've been mistreated and that their confessions were made under duress. She said more cases are likely to come up, with about a dozen people still in detention from last year's crackdown. And she says that there's been little international reaction and hopes that follow soon. About a third of the 2.2 million tons of bombs that dropped on Laos by U.S. forces during a 9-year secret operation during the Vietnam War remain there and remain undetonated. When U.S. President Barack Obama becomes the first sitting U.S. president to visit Laos in September, he is expected to announce an increase in funding to support UXO clearance, that's undetonated ordnance, and support services. And while most of the focus is on efforts to clean up the deadly ordnance, more than 15,000 UXO accident survivors are requiring ongoing care but have few options. Daniel de Carteret reports for VOA from Chien Quang, Laos.
Unexploded ordnance, a legacy of heavy U.S. bombing during the Vietnam War, is a feature of everyday life in the villages of Laos' northeastern Sinh Quan province. In 2004, Hung Pomachak lost both his lower arms and was blinded in one eye when a bomb exploded while he was out collecting old casings to sell for scrap metal. Hung's family and friends had to help pay the hospital bills. His wife now bears much of the load, working in the family rice field, while his daughter, the eldest of five children, cares for her father.
It's very difficult for me. I need someone to help me to eat and drink water and go to the bathroom. If I need to take a bath and there is no one to help me, I can't go. I just have to wait.
Between 1964 and 1973, the U.S. dropped more than 2 million tons of bombs on Laos during a secret operation to curb North Vietnamese supply lines along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. But close to a third of the deadly ordnance still remains unexploded. The government estimates there's about 15,000 people that have survived UXO accidents and are in need of support. But services, which rely largely on foreign funding, like physical therapy, livelihood training, or mental health support, a few. 5 years ago, Le Don was burning rubbish in his yard when the fire activated a bomb buried in the ground below. He was blinded by the accident, and his elderly parents, who rely on subsistence farming, now have to care for their son.
When he is like this, he can't help with work, and it is hard for me to work as well. It makes it difficult for the whole family.
World Education is among the largest of just a few organizations in Laos providing support for UXO victims, but they only have the resources to help 250 people per year. Country manager Colette McInerney says that most survivors who live in remote areas have diverse needs that are not being met.
So for INGOs and NPOs, there really is a serious gap in funding to provide a very comprehensive support to survivors no matter where they live. And then for survivors themselves, the financial burden on a family once someone is injured or killed is quite significant.
While increased education and clearance efforts have contributed to a reduction in yearly UXO casualties, the lifetime of support needed for victims and their families continues to mount. Daniel DeCartere for VOA News, Sinh Quan, Laos.
And there's video with that story. You can find it on our website at voanews.com. The Rio Olympics open later today amid so many questions about whether or not Brazil is ready. VOA Sports editor Park Brewer is there. He tells us that these events always find a way to meet the deadline.
This is my 17th Olympics. You hear a lot of things ahead of Olympics where things are not ready. This happened in Athens. This certainly happened in Sochi. And, these things usually seem to work themselves out once the games start or shortly into the first few days of the games. That's one of the things you have to realize, that ahead of the games, you know, journalists are looking for stories to cover. And these are the things that kind of stand out. And then the organizers get aware of problems that exist and try to work on those things and try to make corrections.
And there's the impact of tough doping sanctions against the Russian team.
There's no question about it that the Russians will not win nearly the number of medals that they have in past games, percentage-wise, or even where they will be in the standings. And, of course, you know, virtually their entire track and field team is not there either. So, that they were banned by track and field's world governing body, and that was backed up by the IOC. There might be a couple selected people from Russia running track for an international team, but absolutely this is going to impact the medal standings with so many Russians being barred from these games.
VOA's Park Brewer, who will be at the games for the next 2 weeks, and you'll hear him right here on International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
VOA's International Edition. Who do you think is the top country artist of all time? Would it be Merle Haggard, Charlie Pride, maybe Willie Nelson? Well, according to Billboard magazine, it's the iconic George Strait, also affectionately known in country music as King George. Nikki Strong of VOA Music tells International Edition's Sarah Williams how this country legend has reigned supreme.
Well, Nikki, this is a huge honor. So what criteria did Billboard use to determine who would be the greatest?
It was basically a numbers game. For the first time, Billboard compiled its country charts over the past six decades, going back to 1958. So they looked at the genre's top artists, songs, and albums and how they fared. So they were assigned values on how they were ranked on the charts, the length of the time in that position, etc. And King George, as we lovingly refer to him, had recorded 44 number one hits on the Hot Country Songs chart, plus an unprecedented 26 number one top country albums, from 1984's Right from Wrong to 2015's Cold Beer Conversation. So King George has ruled the Billboard charts like no other.
George Strait is also honoring Jim Lauderdale at the Americana Music Awards September 21st.
Yeah, he is. Jim Lauderdale is one of Americana and country music's most accomplished songwriters, and he's being honored for his lifelong contributions to Americana music. And George Strait, in particular, has recorded over a dozen of Lauderdale's songs, including Twang and Where the Sidewalk Ends. So basically, one legend will be honoring another.
In addition to King George, who rounds out the top five?
Okay, so number five is Conway Twitty. Number four is Alabama.
Oh.
Number three is Willie Nelson.
Uh-huh.
And number two, not surprisingly, is Merle Haggard.
Billboard also lists the biggest country album of all time and the biggest country song as well.
Yeah, so the top country album is one of my favorites. It's Shania Twain's Come On Over. Yay, Shania! And the top country song is Florida Georgia Line with Cruz. Now, this is funny because the song only came out in 2012.
Yeah.
So it really speaks to technology and the impact that digital sales has had on the charts.
You can also hear music from all of these great artists on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. Feel free to share your thoughts as well. You can reach Nikki on social media at VOA underscore music on Twitter and VOA Music on Facebook. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're very welcome.
Cold beer, conversations, just a couple old boys, a little time well wasted. Trying to figure out life, trying to figure out girl.
You've been listening to George Strait and the rest of International Edition. You can always find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, follow us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. Our director today is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Come back when you can and have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Lesotho has the second highest HIV/AIDS prevalence rate in the world. Nearly 23% of the population is living with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. According to UNAIDS, last year, the majority of infected adults were women, about 170,000 of them, and 13,000 were children under the age of 14. Today, HIV/AIDS is the most frequent cause of orphaning in Lesotho. Some 73,000 children under the age of 17 have lost at least one parent to the disease. Preventing mother-to-child transmission of the disease is one of the most effective ways to reduce the spread of HIV. This is a sound strategy and one that has been adopted to good effect by the government of Lesotho. But it is only effective if women have access to health care, and that can be a problem. As recently as 2013, some 72% of women lived in areas that offered no local HIV/AIDS care. For that reason, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is partnering with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation to launch a five-year, $62 million program that will dramatically expand comprehensive and integrated HIV/AIDS care and treatment services to Lesotho's children and adults affected by HIV. USAID is working through a proxy, Lesotho's Providing Universal Services for HIV/AIDS, or PUSH project. The idea is to expand, by 2018, medical service to 80% of people living with HIV in three new districts. That's in addition to the three districts which are already covered by PEPFAR. This means including family-centered HIV/AIDS care and treatment services at all health facilities and an all-out effort to reduce mother-to-child transmission of HIV to below 5%. The program will help to identify problems and work toward continual improvement at all levels, with an eye toward advancing Lesotho's goal of achieving universal treatment coverage. We have developed this project in close partnership with the Ministry of Health and other vital care and treatment partners in Lesotho, said Cheryl Anderson, USAID's Southern Africa Mission Director. This is part of a unified effort towards achieving the ambitious PEPFAR and UNAIDS 90-90-90 targets with the eventual goal of an AIDS-free generation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.